Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It is Friday, February 21st in the year 2014. This is Jeff Dunphy, and we are on retooling for our coming of age. Last week we started off, and this week we will continue on with a subject matter that talks about how science plays itself into corners on occasion, and then the expose happens. We will wander around the world a little, and we will come into the concept of where and how new ideas may free the population from the tyranny and the nonsense that happens with conventional systems. Want to chat a little about the context of Earth and its inhabitants, whether you are a Canadian or an American or a Mexican or a Puerto Rican or a Brazilian, it matters not. We really are one, and it would be a bit naive to think that the statement, as go we, so go I, is not every bit as much true now as it was 1,000 or 10,000 or 100,000 years ago. Mother Earth is doing some very interesting things of sorts. I'm not sure if any of you have noticed, but certainly the Brits are noticing. And the Brits are getting together trying to figure out whether they save their towns from the water or their country, the counties from the water. We're seeing stuff happening in Britain now that has to do with hurricanes and waters and floods and stuff that is quite mind-boggling. And in fact, record setting, okay, swells up to 75 feet have been recorded offshore. And what's happening now is the UK government is looking at this and going, we have no idea how and what to do. There's, we're talking about the heaviest rainfall in since recorded history of their country. So we saw this and heard about this many years ago in the writing or in the publishing of the book called The Mahatma Letters. Some of the great sages would come out and have conversations with very strong intellects in the British Empire in the late 1800s. And they wrote about how Britain, at some point in the future, 150 or 160 years out, would succumb to water. And we've talked about how the Earth is changing and shifting and moving. We've seen massive ice storms, massive weather effects on the east coast of the U.S., and the skeptics of Earth changes or global warming are saying, yeah, ha ha, this is cold and icy and horrible. Atlanta's never seen ice like this before, and it shut down entire cities, as we've seen. We're seeing emerging markets all over the world playing havoc because their economic recovery, which everybody was holding in bated breath, waiting for, is not happening. We're seeing Venezuela blow up right now with firing of weapons by the government to disintegrate any unrest in the country. There's fires going on. There's government officials shooting people out in the open. Oh, and we're also seeing mainstream media do nothing about it. It would appear as if these things are happening in Venezuela, and mainstream media are turning a blind eye to it, which strikes me as ridiculous. However, it also strikes me as something that we've chatted of before, and that is, if it serves to get them ratings, they will produce it. But if nobody cares about Venezuela, which clearly they're demonstrating, they won't expose it or do any stories on it. Now, in keeping with the fabric of our retooling, I want to speak about how important open minds are to this change of chapter. We move from the Piscean Age into the Aquarian Age, better personified by the song The Coming of the Age of Aquarius back in the 60s. And we see things changing. Now, one of the changes we see on the downside is the upset, the calamity of Mother Nature herself, the calamity of people getting upset, the calamity of Kiev in the Ukraine having aspects of upset being expressed by their citizenry. And we have the same thing going on in Venezuela. We see the capital markets doing weird and odd and peculiar things. We see the manipulation of the capital markets and the gold markets that clearly tell us something. Here's an interesting financial little note. The number of days in which JP Morgan lost money in all of 2013 in its trading organizations was zero. There you go. How do you like them apples? Further evidence of the nonsense that happens in this changing of time. Now, another thing that we did mention of a little while ago was how many countries the U.S. and their special forces, if you will, those would be Navy SEALs and Green Berets and the like, took actions in 2013. The number of countries that the U.S. played their military hand in 2013 was 134. It's an interesting little vignette there, isn't it? The Americans are now policing the earth, and they're policing the earth according to what they think should be happening. That smacks to me a bit of an imposition of their will on other people, which is contrary to the law of free will. We have many cosmic laws. The law of free will is one that stipulates that you impose on another at your own peril. There is no way out of the implications of your own imposition on others when you impose your will on others. The Americans have a great propensity to do this. And unfortunately, their predisposition about policing the earth is costing them, one, enormous amounts of money, and two, enormous amounts of resistance. There is a movie that has recently been released. It was released in Robert Redford's backyard in Colorado. And it's available on Netflix and also available on Amazon, and it's called Dirty Wars. And while it is a bit overproduced, it also speaks to how the Americans go in completely unfettered by news coverage and completely with lack of transparency in order to move their agenda forward. Scares me a bit. Again, food for thought. We talk about keeping open minds. We talk about entertaining places. We talked last week about, are you prepared to stand in a place where you can postpone or dispel disbelief for just a moment and see things that fly in the face of convention? We have a wonderful thing, and that is a mind, and a mind unfettered by programming, untethered by the nonsense that mainstream media would put forward and tell us what to think. Let us now climb into the realm where we choose to see what is, not what we want to see. For open minds, as I've said before, are like parachutes. They are very worthwhile when they are open, but if they are closed, they are absolutely useless and lead to nothing but the misery of a collapse. We're chatting, and we have continued to chat about how the exploitation of the many to benefit the few has been perpetrated on us by governments all over the planet, and certainly by a group of individuals who are running the money or the banking group in the world, which is, in my opinion, and certainly in many people's observation, is a parasitic organism that really brings nothing to bear of value to the system. It just skims off the top. And in fact, our good friend Brent Johnson at Santiago Capital, he has recently put out a new little presentation called Stockholm, and it's about how we have been scammed, if you will, or deluded into thinking that the government is taking care of us and the Federal Reserve is taking care of us by using a system that literally steals from the many to benefit the few, and how they've managed to convince us that they are working in our best interests. Delusory at best. So it brings to mind a quote that might give us food for thought, and is, when it lies in your power to do it, it lies in your power not to do it. And as we see the digressions of mankind becoming more and more taken away, if you will, by greed, you see those few who dare to stand up and say, as go we, so go I, let's act in the greater good rather than in the selfish good. And we see people coming to that recognition now, and let us trust even those individuals who have been, we see in the New York Times from time to time, who have been earning money hand over fist, extricating themselves from that nonsense, because they do get and understand how incredibly derisive and how it denigrates the very system that we live in. We have been witness to in the last few weeks or month, at least a couple of J.P. Morgan's individuals who have been, as our friends at No Agenda like to call, they have been suicided. One guy leapt off a building to his death, and the other guy committed suicide as well. Now, the police official report is that he committed suicide, but the lunacy of it all is, as our guys at No Agenda will call, is they shot themselves in the head twice, right? So it lends itself, again, food for thought. They may have come up to something. Their conscience and their conscientiousness may have come to the place where they said, we can't stand for this anymore. We may have to do an expose. We may have to tell how these things are done. I think there is a lot of putting out of fires right now and no running of the ship. And so consequently, we have the calamity gaining momentum, the law of acceleration speeding all this nonsense up so it brings it to a head. And as many are wont to say, and we are one of them, this will not end well. Now, that being said, I want to chat a little about the fact that it ends means that something else is beginning. And this is what gives us hope, and this is what gives us the light at the end of the tunnel. And this is what skeptics believe should be postponed as long as possible. However, those of us who are modestly less afraid of the calamity that is that we're in the throes of happening would like to think that bringing on the new way of life, the new way of managing, the new way of organizing civilization, organizing a society where we look out for one another, it cannot come soon enough. All the forces in the world are not so powerful as an idea whose time has come. Let us energize this idea. Let's energize the idea that it's important to be self-reliant. It's important to watch things, take exception to things, and stand up against them. Because one of the things that mainstream media, certainly the government, and certainly the powers that be behind the money, they don't want anybody to be independent thinkers. They don't want anybody to take exception to the nonsense that they are doing. The imprisonment of humanity. The most common way people give up their freedom is by thinking they don't have any, or by deluding themselves into thinking they can't fight City Hall, which is an old Taoist saying that Master Chang once gave me many, many years ago. And none are more hopelessly enslaved than those who falsely believe they are free. And this is the manner in which mankind is enslaved by the few in order to facilitate their agenda. So now I want to pick up the thread from last week, and I want to chat a little about a revised way of thinking that may prove to have a bit more merit than the current nonsense. I want to step out of the norm. I want to step into a new paradigm shift, if you will, as one of my producers is wont to say, and create a new aspect of reality, a broader, wider, more enlightened aspect. Now let's wander back that revisit the thread from last week, and we talk about a revised modality of thinking, but let us chat a little about the fact that we are of the opinion firmly, or of the knowing, that civilization has developed many times in the past, and it has developed in a cyclic way, and each of these cycles develop from being less to more evolved, and then they fall out of evolution, they fall out of being highly evolved, merely because they make things more and more personal. They make things more and more of the lower realms. They make things more and more fraught with greed or fraught with self-servingness. Okay? So now I want to chat a little about another truth and that is discoveries of advanced civilizations dating long, long ago perhaps could prove insightful into solving the crises of our time that our ancestors also faced in theirs. Now, let us also chat about, as the world turns, sounds a wee bit like a soap opera, doesn't it? As the world turns, we are coming into calamity that we are going to need to collaborate, the three C's again. We're going to need to collaborate in order to see ourselves out the other end. And consequently, as our biologists, as our anthropologists, as our archaeologists see, they're starting to come to conclusions that fly in the face of conventional science, fly in the face of conventional science. So one of the things that that a guy named Paley once wrote, and there is a principle proof against all argument, a bar against all progress, and which, if persisted in, cannot but keep the mind in everlasting ignorance, and that is contempt prior to examination. What a great declaration. And that is something that we wish to entertain. That's something that we wish to empower. Lack of contempt prior to examination and the capacity to dispel disbelief, but for a moment, as we further our own knowledge, our own revelation of what is going on. Now, I want to chat a little about human origins. I want to chat a little about biology. I also want to chat a little about how the ancients spoke of certain things that are happening and have happened all throughout time that gave, should give us great reverence for their insight and their knowledge. Okay? So we have biologists talking about the definition of life is something that meets four criteria, and this would be metabolism, growth, reaction to stimuli, and reproduction. And life in general, and human life in particular, is only known to result from biological material that is already living. So there's something that the cellular biologists, zoologists, and the like, have discovered, and they can't explain it, but what happens is it, at the eight-cell stage of life, something very mysterious, a mysterious process that is still not fully understood, awakens the code of life. And that is when the DNA, our DNA, deoxyribonucleic acid, is stimulated and activated. And it is at this eight-cell stage of life that the traits that make us, the DNA, what we become, it's activated or stimulated. Now, I want to chat with you a little about a saying in the Hermetic philosophy, and in a saying from the ancient scriptures. I am one, then I am two, then I am four, then I am eight, and then I am one again. What cellular mitosis says and what the scientists, the biologists are coming to light with is 1, 2, 4, 8 and one again is that time at which the DNA is activated. Now, this is an esoteric discovery the ancients knew from long ago and have been propagating it to those with ears and eyes, ears to see, and eyes to hear, or vice versa. Now, let us chat a little about everything having life, which is called hylozoism, and let us chat with some assumptions that have presented themselves to us historically that perhaps may be not only wrong, but a bit incomplete. Now, we have, at the time of Charles Darwin's Origin of Species, we welcomed it with open arms, but even Charles Darwin himself was a little convinced of its inconclusiveness and incompleteness. And so I want to chat a little about Darwinian assumptions and the evolution assumption number one that he has put forward. He put forward 100 years ago. Life may arise spontaneously from non-living material. The evolution assumption number two is that nature doesn't endow a species beyond what it needs to live. And the evolution assumption number three is existing species may evolve into entirely new species over time. Now, that being said, this is where science oftentimes stumbles over itself, but let us not lose sight of something that may need to be the precursor of something more advanced. And this, as we have spoken of for a long time, is the advance of esoteric sciences. And the advance of esoteric sciences would have us weave into the science of today a way in which the science of today can extricate itself from the black box of the dogma that it has perhaps enslaved itself in. Okay, so now let us wander through something that the ancients have told us from time immemorial and continue to tell us, and we shall facilitate something that deals with and appropriates an intelligent design. There is an order in the universe. It has been spoken about from time immemorial, and that might be the premise behind the perhaps misguided predisposition by many of the religions that God made the universe, because they anthropomorphize God and they have God as an individual man that is making things. However, intelligent design assumption one may stipulate that there is an order in the universe. And intelligent design assumption number two is the complexities of living systems can best be explained by directed rather than random processes. I want to chat a little about this because it's very important. The complexities of living systems today can best be explained by directed rather than random processes. We didn't come about by happenstance. We did not come about by happenstance. Now, we entertained the context of irreducible complexity last week, and I want to revisit it now for a moment. And let us chat a little about how a system in and of itself may be very, very complex. However, if you take something out of the system in and of itself no longer works. And this would be the definition of irreducible complexity. In any portion of a system stops working, the entire system stops working. So if we take the cog out of a watch, the watch stops working. If we take a process out of cellular mitosis, the whole process of cellular mitosis stops working. It behooves us to recognize that there may be something far more intelligent behind the brilliance. This is why people talk about the brilliance of birth being such a miracle. But is it time for us to recognize that there is something definitive in the modality, the methodology, and the design of the human species? Now, let us not get carried away and think that a man designed it. Let us get carried away and think that there are a set of laws. These laws we would posit are the cosmic laws that we speak of constantly. These laws are what allows mankind to manifest itself in this time, in his own discovery, who am I, into the discovery of the earth, in the discovery of what is transpiring. So which brings us to another deep truth, and that is a growing body of scientific data from multiple disciplines gathered using new technology provides evidence beyond reasonable doubt that humankind reflects a design put in place at once rather than a life form emerging randomly through an evolutionary process over time. Now, this would stipulate, as I have said historically, that evolutionary processes and activation energies create an observation of step
ups in evolution. We push and push and push on the wheel of evolution, and all of a sudden it starts to move. It starts to, we create motion in it, and we keep pushing. And when we studied our biology in our high school, or in university, depending, we talked about an activation energy to which the electrons transferring and moving in an orbit around the neutron in an atom, once they are activated, energized, stimulated into another orbit, and they start to revolve and start to rotate in another orbit entirely. It isn't gradual. It is a step up. So the truth, again, is a growing body of scientific data from multiple disciplines gathered using new technology provides evidence beyond reasonable doubt that humankind reflects a design put in place at once rather than a life form emerging randomly through an evolutionary process over a long period of time. This would stipulate that Darwin started off okay, but not only was incomplete, was black boxing it at the time, that everybody has subscribed to so wholeheartedly that it's precluded them from recognizing some of this scientific data that's going on. Okay. Now we're going to leave that. We're going to stipulate and wander through the special ops game in the special ops world. And that would be, as we said a little while ago, there, a movie called Dirty Wars, about how many countries that the U.S. and its special operations group is involved in, to the tune of 134 countries. And we're going to chat a little about war and how it has evolved and how it is presented now to mankind in order to further facilitate the growth of the behemoth that we call the industrial military complex. Now, some would have us think that the industrial military complex is something that had Kennedy killed. Certainly that's something that had anybody who would propagate leaving Vietnam. So consequently, they are threatened because of a budget of $2.5 trillion, the Americans spend $600 billion on defense, on policing the planet, on protecting us. Hello. Hello. Let's pay attention to the war that we've now instigated all over the planet. We are waging war in 134 countries. Most people don't know anything about it. Certainly they talk about Afghanistan. Certainly they talk about Iraq. Certainly they talk about faraway places, and they're now starting to wage war on their own citizens. However, I want to do a comparison between the wars of today and the wars of yesteryear, but I want to chat a little about the Second World War and how it was viewed by the hierarchy, these great sages that are acting in alignment with the cosmic laws to bring about the turn of a new age, to bring about the coming of the age of Aquarius in a way that is beneficial to the all, greater good. So let's chat a little about the Second World War. Now, the Second World War and the First World War, interestingly, are referred to by the ancients and by these sages as one war, with but a brief gap in the middle. And the brief gap, it ended in 19 and started again in 39. A brief gap of 20 years, when you see things in terms of thousands of years, is but a brief gap. So World War II, which involved the U.S., and it's there's many, many layers of this, but let's be succinct in our summary of it so that we can further propagate some food for thought. So the U.S. involvement began with a surprise attack on American soil and the loss of 2,400 lives. This was the attack on Pearl Harbor. Hitler, and certainly the Japanese, posed a definitive threat in that Hitler wanted to take over the world. Interestingly, now, years later, the Americans are doing everything they can to take over the world. The reason for the war could be identified and stated quite clearly. The enemy was clearly defined. There's no question that the Allies the Americans, the Brits, the French or the French freedom fighters, and various other, the Australians, the Canadians, the, all over the world, and the Axis, the Germans and the Japanese and the Italians and some of the French, although I think the French just gave up as opposed to allying themselves, okay? The borders of conflict were clearly identified as physical locations within countries. Germany first took over Austria, and then they expanded their move. They went after Moscow. They did a bunch of, they went after Russia. Okay, and the engagement of forces was generally between military powers trained and prepared for battle. And the war ended in 4 or 5 years with agreements on the terms. There was a surrender, a declaration of surrender. Germany surrendered and Japan surrendered definitively. And now let's chat about 139 countries, and let's chat about what's going on with the black waters of the world, with the special ops of the world, with the nonsense that's happening with the war on terror. So U.S. involvement began with a surprise attack on American soil and the loss of 2,800 lives. I don't think you have to go very far on the internet to recognize that perhaps this was not a surprise attack. Perhaps it was a definitive attack by Americans on their own country in order to further propagate an agenda. Head to the internet, investigate some of this information. It abounds. There's lots of it. Now, the reason for the war on terror is completely defined by who is talking about the war on terror. And it is stated differently, and it's stated by different parties in different ways. I would suggest that the war on terror sometimes gives license to many parties in order to facilitate their own agenda anywhere on the planet. The Americans have been accused of, or certainly called out on the fact, certainly this is Edward Snowden's predisposition on things, that they have been spying and been conducting all kinds of covert spying operations on people all over the world. And they're doing it contrary to people's respected privacy. So consequently, the Americans, and this talks about the 10 steps that closed an open society, which we will chat a little about in future broadcasts. And we've also chatted about in our Bosco chapter. So the enemy then is quite nebulous, as we have seen and recognized, because the agenda of the warriors, if you will, is to facilitate their own agenda and to push anybody who is contrary to their own agenda into the enemy category. Now, if you can't define the enemy, how are you supposed to fight them? And what is happening right now is the NSA, the CIA, the special ops groups, that are everywhere on the planet are busy monitoring stuff. And take my word on it, as a professor of technology in the engineering faculty, I mean, one of the things that technology is now giving them the opportunity to do is the brilliant computing power and the magnificent capacity that they can have in order to have surveillance almost on anybody anywhere, and how they can, in fact, although some would be skeptical of this, they can, in fact, listen to everything that is being said and monitor it. If you can take your phone and ask Siri to find out who is winning the hockey game at any given point in time, if you can ask Siri what the weather is going to be like, I can tell you unequivocally their capacity to listen to conversations, even sped up conversations, and comprehend them and imply artificial intelligence to them is stunning. So it would be naive of anybody to think that the spying forces of whoever it would be, the NSA or the CIA, are not capable of listening to every conversation. I think they would be best served to reconsider. So the enemy is nebulous, so they can posit that anybody could be the enemy. The other thing that happens is the borders of conflict are nebulous and not necessarily limited to countries, which again gives them want to roam around into various countries in order to facilitate their own agenda. 134 countries. When Bush was around, it was 70. So they've almost doubled it. And Obama was supposed to be the savior of the U.S., not suggesting that Bush was not maniacally flawed, but I would say that Obama is caught in a system that has run amok and is completely contrary to the well-being of the participants in the country. Are we playing into a place where we, the people, are working for the government or are being kept in the dark by the government in order for the government to carry out its nefarious agenda? So the, now that the a little more on the war on terror, and the engagement of force is viewed by one side as a military conflict that accepts civilian casualties as part of the cost of war, and the other treats military and civilian targets equally and makes little or no distinction between the two. This movie that we spoke of, called Dirty Wars, brings some stuff into light that is quite interesting and food for thought that should give us great pause and should give us great cause to rebel, to stand up and say this is not right. It is not okay for we as Americans, for we as North Americans, for we as Europeans even, to stand idly by and allow our governments to do such atrocious things in countries merely to carry out their own agenda. This is the antithesis of cooperation, collaboration, and collectivism. The Americans and their use of drones, they come in and bomb people, and they come in and kill people willy-nilly with little regard for civilian targets and civilian people. And then they're also doing this more and more and more under the guise of non-transparency, because they are feeling as if they can transcend the rule of law, not only the rule of law, which is prescriptive, social laws are prescriptive, cosmic laws are descriptive. And so part of the conflagration of the U.S. predisposition towards their expressing their power all over the globe is that they're starting to see a lot of pushback. Now, the other thing that is desperately unfortunate and also incredibly illustrative of where this is going is the war on terror started in 01, apparently. It's now 13 years later, and not only is the end of fighting nowhere near in sight, the number of countries that they're taking the battle to is shockingly, maniacally growing. I mean, pretty soon, there's not going to be a country on the planet that the Americans are not involved in, which, I mean, I suspect they are. We just haven't been told, in terms of forwarding their own agenda. Okay. So now let's chat a little about how the psychologists have recognized how we will betray our own peaceful nature, because some scientists have discovered that historically, civilizations have existed where there was a peaceful predisposition towards things as they were. And as things fell out of the alliance, fell out of compliance with cooperation and collaboration, as the fall from grace happened, if you want to use religious terms, as we became more and more greedy, this isn't a process that lasts a week, a year, or even 1,000 years. It lasts thousands of years. It's slow in its demise, and the fall from grace brings us just more and more into the greedy, more self-serving aspect, into the denser realms. So we were historically peaceful, and we were historically enlightened, and we fell out of that. We fell into the darkness. We fell into the gloom of selfishness. So we've discovered that we will betray our peaceful nature when we feel personally threatened, and I've talked about this on other shows as well, when the James Bond of the world says, "Behave or I'll beat you up," he sort of laughs in their face, and then he said, "Well, then I will go and torture or hurt your family." And that's sometimes when the tough guys are softened up by saying, "You can hurt or even kill me, but don't touch or hurt my family." So when our families are threatened, we will betray our peaceful nature. And when we feel that our way of life is threatened. And so consequently, this is one of the ways that the powers that be can offer justification to go in and dabble in the world by telling us if we don't do so, our way of life will be compromised. Our way of life will be compromised. Now, color me curious. Color me optimistic, but that will change. There is coming a time where everybody looks at the way things are governed and says, no more. This is nonsense. This is crazy. I'm not prepared to think the worst of everybody and to lash out at everybody. I'm not prepared to act as a reptile, to act as an animal that is constantly under threat and surveillance and fear. I will not be controlled by fear. I want to chat a little about a book that was written some time ago called No Contest. And it was written about a scientific study that was gathered from more than 400 peer review studies on competition. Now, of these 400 studies, the underlying question in these studies was aligned in, is competition beneficial, progressive, insightful, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Does competition benefit us? And it's leading to an undeniable truth, and violent competition and war contradict our deepest instincts on cooperation and nurturing. It's not how we are wired. Competition is not a progressive act. It is not a progressive act. We are not by nature competitive. We are by nature cooperative because we do, and underlining our very memory, our very cosmic memory, is that things go far better along with the thinking, as go we, so go I. We have seen, and we do see, the competitive nature of the physical sports is quite shocking. And back to this study, of all 400 of these studies, all of them came, get a load of this, all of them came to the same conclusion. Competition is not beneficial. It leads to, again, it leads to a self-serving act of selfishness. Now, we're in the middle of the Olympics, and we're in the middle of ice skating. Some Olympics ago, I can't remember which year it was, maybe in the late 80s or early 90s, but there was one of the girls running around, sent off her henchmen to hit the knees of another girl to ruin her chance because she was so concerned about winning. And that isn't so much winning by doing well, it's winning by disposing of your competition. What an unbelievably petty but incredibly illustrative example of how to win by making somebody else lose. This is what we call a zero-sum-based modality of thinking. Now, Master Chang years ago, and certainly he still maintains and remains with it today, but he talked about how you interact with and how you engage others in moving forward with anything that you do with them. And he taught that it has an aspect of theme and variation. And the best way that you can interact with another individual, whether that individual be a child, a parent, a person, a company, an organization, a citizenry, military, any of it. But as you work with them, the best way to act is so your actions are win and win. The next best way to act is where your actions are win and not lose. And the third way to act, although there are in fact six, the third way to act is win and lose. And that is the least effective way. Now, the variation on that is not win or not lose. So be flat and flat on the other side, B, not win and lose on the other side, and then the worst would be losing and losing. I suspect, in alignment with the cosmic laws, that we are the way that the economy is run, the way that the military are involved in 134 countries, the way that we are propagating our selfishness all over the planet. I think we are working with, from the perspective of the ancients and perspective of the sages, we think we are working in a lose-lose. Everything we do is making our citizenry lose, and everything we do is making ourselves lose sooner or later. This style of and manner of nonsense that we are propagating throughout the planet has to end. And as many people are saying, it will not end well. It will be an ugly end. The economy, the political agenda, the military expansion, the monopolization and the manipulation of the marketplace, it will not end well. So this is, again, another reason why we default to that which has been given us by the advanced civilizations of the world over time, and that is how important gold is, how important gold and silver are over time. So now I want to chat a little about a hierarchy of thinking and how it manifests itself. So if we have a way of thinking based on false assumptions of science, let us wander through what transpires in this false assumptions of science. Okay, so we talk about the origin of life and how it, according to Darwinian theory, it was just random how the origins of life happened. It was just perchance. It was just literally random. And then perhaps based on new discoveries of science, or better still, based on the ancients' understanding and the ancients' teaching of understanding, is that there is a directed process of design, and that comes about by the integration and the synthesis and the expression of cosmic law. Back to the false assumption of science, the origin of human life, again, is based on the chance occurrence of random processes. And the origin of life based on this revelation of time, which has never been a revelation more so, it's just us getting our heads out of the sand. There is a rare combination of designed systems that manifest itself on humanity that direct it into its next stage of evolution. So now, in terms of the hierarchy of thinking, we've gone from the origin of life to the origin of human life, and now we speak of our relationship to our body, and the old false assumptions would have us stipulate that we are separate and independent. And I would suggest that the ancients, that the masters, would have us know that we are connected and linked. We are connected and linked. As go we, so go I. We are connected and linked, and we are connected and interdependent in the grander scheme. Okay, now we step up into our relationship to the world. Well, our relationship to the world, in the old assumption, is it's linear and it's a one-way trend, and it's separate and it's independent and it's separate and it's powerless. And perhaps we can now propagate our relation to the world is we are connected, we are interdependent. And the world is based on cycles. The law of cycles or the law of periodicity. And these conditions and crises repeat themselves. And they repeat themselves in the normal course of evolution. In the normal course of evolution, they repeat themselves so we can evolve into the cosmic laws. We are now at a point, the geoscientists tell us that the Earth is less dense than it was 110 or 100 or 1,000 years ago. So the actual geoscientists know that the Earth is becoming less dense. And if it happens to the Earth, if it happens to the planet, it must, by the law of correspondence, happen to us. So we are becoming less dense, or we are evolving. So the period of involution on the planet has come, and we are now in the period of evolution. This is the time of revelation. This is the time of the turning of the tides. So now we have the history of the world. The history of the world, perhaps, in terms of the false assumptions of science or in the false theorems that we're now starting to get, that they are merely starting points of something a little more advanced. We look back on history and we figured that we solve problems through competition, force, and conflict. The golden rule is the man who held the gold made the rules. The forceful rule is the guy who held the stick made the rules. And now perhaps we are starting to come to a point where the calamity that faces the earth today is ours collectively, and there is no way that we can get through this upcoming trial without recognizing that cooperation, understanding, collectivism, collaboration, and mutual aid is what will get us through this next stage. The old ways of thinking will not serve us as we march into this tipping point of crises. There's a tipping point there. It is stunningly obvious for those with eyes to see and ears to hear, and for those with you who have noses to smell. Let us not lose sight of our obligation. Let's not stand by idly and say, I can't do anything about it. Let's wake up. It is the time of revelation. It is the time to wake up. And it is time to investigate new ways of thinking, new ways of viewing things, and new parts of conversations that we might become a part of a conversation that brings people back to their senses, their sense of who they are, the sense of what they stand for, the sense of the timing of what is going on right now in the history of the world, a sense of the bigger picture. A sense of the bigger picture is incredibly important merely because we oftentimes get lost of not being able to see the forest for the trees. And this revolves around perspective. And this also revolves around group speak or self-speak or self-talk. So I'm going to end our little iteration today with some declarations that are easily embraced and perhaps could be entertained in our daily thinking, that our enlightening are enlightened and will contribute to the benefit of all. Three C's: cooperation, collaboration, and collectivism. As go we, so go I. So let us wander through some of these. Today I am filled with discerning mind. I will be clear in my decisions and gracious in my offering of support and wisdom to others. Today, I present myself as a living offering for the liberation of humanity. May I cherish the privilege of giving this gift. Today, I invoke clarity in all areas of my life. I accept the challenges that come to me as I open to the wisdom it brings. I will empower myself with full wisdom and clarity today. I choose to live from my fullest potential. I release all obstacles to wisdom and clarity. I free myself to walk in the world with healed mind and heart. My mind is open and available to receive the full manifestation of indwelling spirit. My heart is open and selects to hold compassionate wisdom, kindness, and clarity in all of my interactions from this day forward. My ears and eyes are dedicated to the discerning flow of the divine within me this day. Now, This is food for thought and extraordinary food for the divine part of you. I thank you for your observation of who you are, and I thank you for listening and allowing me and we here at Retooling for Our Coming of Age to be of service. We trust that this serves you, and we thank you for allowing us to be as perfect instruments in this coming of age. Thank you. This is Jeff Dunphy. I will see you again or speak with you again next week.